to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn from The Creative Pen, and today I'm interviewing Livia Blackburn. Livia is a neuroscience graduate student at MIT, conducting research on the neural correlates of reading. She also writes fantasy stories for young adults and blogs at A Brain Scientist's Take on Writing. So welcome, Livia.
Hello.
It's great to have you on the show after so long, you know, sort of talking online and everything. So maybe you can start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background and your neuroscience background.
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me on the show. I've been following your blog for a while, so it's nice to talk to you finally. So I guess my writing background and my neuroscience background. Like many writers, I've been writing pretty much for as long as I've been reading. So I remember in sixth grade or so, I writing this really bad fantasy story, and it kind of kept on going from there. All throughout high school, I've always loved writing stories. At the end of my high school career, I started focusing more on science, dropped out on the writing thing for a while, and so I got my degree in biochemistry and then neuroscience, and I think a few years ago I had maybe what you might call a quarter life crisis or something, and realized I really needed to get back into writing because it was something that I really enjoyed doing. So I went back to all the stories that I had written in high school and kind of took some of the characters and started reworking those again. And, of course, by that time, I was a graduate student in neuroscience. And so I kind of had this different perspective on writing than I had before. And that's how I started blogging, because it's kind of an interesting intersection of things. So now I have my YA writing on the side. And I've also started kind of nonfiction writing on neuroscience and the intersection.
Between the two. Maybe you could just explain what neuroscience is to anyone who's listening who doesn't know what that is.
Okay, so what I do is a cognitive neuroscience, which is kind of the intersection of psychology and the study of the brain. We basically take people and put them in the MRI scanner and scan their brains while they're doing different tasks to see what kind of brain regions are involved, how they work, those kinds of questions.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's such an interesting area. We could talk about that for hours, but this is a writing show. So
oh, right.
we'll talk about that. So one question I had is, you know, a lot of people have this, would it be a myth of the left brain, right brain separation? I mean, in the neuroscience being science and writing supposedly creative, you know, how do you blend those two? And is that left brain, right brain distinction a myth, I guess?
Okay, so I guess there's several questions here. The first one, the left brain, right brain distinction. There is some truth to that, but it's kind of been taken and run with to a point where it's no longer true. It is true that the left brain and the right brain do have different functions. The left brain tends to be involved in language, and the right brain seems to be more involved in spatial holistic processing. I'm not sure there's much evidence for what we usually think of as the left brain being logical, right brain being creative, that kind of thing. But it's a useful way to think about it sometimes. Just kind of, you know, in a way to, if you're just talking about things. As to the intersection between neuroscience and writing, it's interesting because I actually find the two very similar, in that at least I'm interested in both of them because they're kind of looking at how people work. So you can either do that by, you know, doing experiments, putting people on the scanner. Then you get kind of a really objective way of just looking at how people in general look. But, you know, you miss a lot of that. You miss a lot of the human experience, I guess, if you're just looking at, you know, how people as a population look and just looking at their neurons. And I think that's where literature comes in, where you can really get into someone's brain and kind of look at people from the inside.
Mm. No, that's it's so fascinating because I just told you before, you know, I went in an MRI machine once, and it very excitingly they give you a picture of your brain, and
yes.
And I was like, wow, it's my brain, and it looks like every other brain or every other brain that's normal, you know.
Yeah, it's always kind of scary the first time you go into an MRI because you're always wondering, well, like, what if there's a big hole in there? What if I'm missing something or other?
Yeah,
but usually it turns out okay.
Yeah, and but I guess what you're saying is that, you know, you can have a look at, you know, some, you know, colours lighting up or whatever in people's brains, but there's a hell of a lot more going on that we just don't know yet, is that neuroscience is really so new.
Right, and it will be many, many years, I think, before we can really unpack what those little blobs of light mean.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so sort of talking about your own writing. So clearly you write scientific papers and you also write fantasy fiction. So how do you switch between the two and how do you blend those, I guess, successfully in your life?
So I tend to approach the two pretty differently, just even in terms of kind of writing methods. If I'm writing something nonfiction scientific, I do kind of a progressive outline approach where I'll just go through again and again, kind of adding things. For some reason, that doesn't work as well with fiction. I don't know, it ends up being a little dry if I write fiction that way. There's definitely aspects of writing that carry over to both, I think. Just the mechanics of writing and, you know, writing good, clean prose that I've learned in one domain have kind of transferred to the other.
Mm. So, sorry, you said the progressive adding for nonfiction. So how do you write for your fiction?
For fiction, then I usually, and I guess we can, this touches on maybe some creativity stuff that we might touch on later. But for fiction, I tend to brainstorm it, brainstorm a scene at a time while I'm away from the computer and just kind of thinking about that and having an entire scene in my head, and then I'll sit down and write it down.
Mm, no, that's interesting. When you do that, are you a visual person in that? Are you visually, do you draw pictures and things, or are you writing words down with your brainstorm and you do mind map, stuff like that?
It's more of just kind of having a movie playing in my brain. I'll kind of see the whole thing happening.
Mm. I think that's really cool because I've really only discovered after finishing the first sort of draft of my novel, then I discovered scenes and went back and kind of did exactly that with the second draft, which would have been much more effective if I'd have done it the first time.
So do you do outlines or pictures or anything?
Yeah, well, I was doing that. I was doing mind maps for some of those scenes and trying to get, I had one scene in Arizona in a storm, and I was, you know, doing loads of research on that and doing lots of mind maps and things. And then I wrote it out. It's, as you said, kind of playing it in my head. So it's really interesting when you hear other people doing the same thing, isn't it? okay, good. So a couple of things there about blending. And actually, it's interesting you said about writing clean prose because my background is in business and business and finance, I guess, and IT. So I'm very used to writing business writing, which is similar to science writing. And I thought that was a negative. But as you've said, I find it a positive in writing short sentences and, you know, clean prose. I think that's what you mean, is it?
Yeah, so I guess you have to think about what your purpose is and what kind of, you know, audience you're reaching. So I do think some of my the things I've learned about voice and fiction can also carry over to nonfiction to liven up the prose a bit too. So it goes both ways.
Mm, yeah, some of those psychology journals are really boring.
Oh dear, yeah.
That's good. Okay, so coming back to the sort of the neuroscience stuff, you had some good, you know, you've got some really good blog posts on brain manipulation and stuff like that. So what are some of the findings from neuroscience that can help writers?
Okay, so I tend to see neuroscience findings as a good way, as a good reminder of techniques we can use as writers. So one interesting thing that I recently wrote about is how the brain processes metaphor. So it's the idea that the brain uses concrete experiences to understand more abstract experiences. So for example, the same part of the brain that processes physical warmth, just hot or cold things that you touch, is also used to then kind of process emotional warmth. And so that would be, you know, whether someone has a warm, friendly personality or something, that would be the same brain region that's involved in judging that. And that shows through in some pretty interesting experiments. So there's this one experiment where the scientists, they had people hold either hot or cold cups of coffee. And so that was the only difference between these two groups of people. And the people with the warm cup of coffee, they rated a hypothetical stranger as being more friendly than the people who held the cold cup of coffee. So it's just interesting how these different kinds of concepts spill over into each other in our brain. And as a writer, then it's interesting to think about then how can I use touch imagery or this idea of like hot and cold things, how can I incorporate that into my writing to set the kind of atmosphere I want or to have to characterize a character a certain way.
Mm, well, that's fantastic. And also the concrete to experience abstract is exactly the sort of show don't tell, isn't it? You can't say, that's exactly what it is.
And it's interesting because, you know, writers to some degree have known this all along. They figured it out even without the brain science, but the brain science is a good way to kind of bring it back up and remind us of this tool that we have.
Mm. Mm. Have you got any other great findings?
We used for sensory images, then those same brain regions will activate for when we're reading versus in real life. So the visual regions will activate when you're reading about kind of visual images. The auditory regions will activate when you're reading about auditory regions and so forth. And then going from that, then you can kind of, it's again a good reminder to go through and think, oh, am I using all the senses? There's also, there's a place region. So am I kind of using setting in a good way, or am I going into my character's head in a, in an effective way or not?
Mm. No, that's really good. I love all this stuff. It's brilliant. Okay, so you also wrote a guest post at ProBlogger on functioning at your creative best. So I wondered if you could maybe outline that for people, because it was about the deliberate and spontaneous pathways. So that sounded fascinating. So maybe you could explain that a bit more.
Sure. So I should give credit here to Shelley Carson. She gave the talk that I based this post on, and she actually has a book out, I think, now called Your Creative Brain that talks about this in more detail. So what she talks about then is kind of different states that your brain can be in and how those relate to creativity. So she calls those the deliberate and spontaneous pathways. So the deliberate pathway, it's when you're really focused, when you have a goal. That's when the, for brain nerds out there, the prefrontal cortex is involved in that. And that's when you have something to do and you do it. It's so when you're sitting down, really concentrating on a task. So that's the deliberate pathway. On the flip side, there's the spontaneous pathway, or the spontaneous state, I guess. Which happens when you're not focusing on anything. So if you're on a walk, if you're in the shower, in a boring meeting, your mind's kind of wandering, that's the spontaneous state. And those two states are good for different things. So if you want to, get a piece of writing done, if you know what you're going to write, then you want to be in the deliberate state. However, that's not the time when you're going to be coming up with these brilliant, creative ideas, because you're too focused on one thing. You can't see outside of the box. The best time to get to brainstorm, get good ideas, is when you're in a spontaneous state. So if you're not sitting in front of your computer looking at a blank screen, but rather if you're going on a walk or, while you're in the shower, when you have time to relax, kind of free associate. And Carson recommends having a piece of paper or something to write down your ideas while you're kind of in the spontaneous state, so you don't forget them. And so it's kind of understanding what kind of work environment, what kind of brain state is the best for the task that you want to do.
Mm. And when people say that they're blocked, is that because they can't really get into that spontaneous pathway, I guess?
It could be. I mean, that's, there's probably a lot of reasons why people become blocked, but one could be that they're focusing so hard on trying to figure something out that they've kind of gotten too small and can't really let the creative juices flow.
Mm. And do you think there also that those we were talking before about the sort of first draft and brainstorming and things, is that spontaneous more first draft stuff and then the deliberate sort of the editor brain, I guess?
So I tend to separate even the first draft stuff into two parts then. So for me, the spontaneous would be while I'm walking to work, brainstorming the scene, trying to get into the movie. When I write down, then for me, my first draft is already pretty deliberate. But I can see if you're a, what they call a pantser in the way you plot, if you don't really outline, then your first draft might be a more spontaneous thing.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. And, do you have any, I guess we mentioned the shower then, but people would have to spend a lot of time in the shower. Do you have any other favorite ways to get into that kind of spontaneous state?
One of my favorite ways is taking a walk is good. Another way that helps is, I don't recommend this, but mild intoxication also kind of puts you in this creative state. I have to say it's not one of my personal favorite ways, but it's interesting how, there's a lot of good writers that, end up being alcoholics, and I sometimes wonder if that's somehow related.
Well, I wrote a post on this last year. It's one of my top posts of all time. Does alcohol help your writing? And it has so many comments on. I mean, it's an amazing, it's my most commented post. Is people have all these sort of, one person is, I hate alcohol, it's awful. And then other people are like, I need a couple of drinks before I write. So it's definitely a topic that people are quite passionate about.
Yeah, well, I kind of have the Asian genes that don't let me handle alcohol very well. But I will say that probably my best piece of nonfiction written to date, which would be my graduate school admissions essay, was written on a plane where they were giving away free drinks. I don't know if that's an accident or not, but decide for yourself.
Oh, but this podcast does not recommend drinking.
No. Olivia Blackburn does not recommend that either.
No, I must have some secret Asian gene then, because I'm the same as you. I'm a shocker. Anyway, okay, so moving on. So you talk there about the lady, was it Shelley, who you learnt that stuff from?
Yes.
Mm. And what I like about your blog, and I'm like this too, is you go to a lot of conferences and you share what you've learnt on your blog. So do you do that deliberately? I mean, the whole learning, is that part of how you sort of function in general? And is that something you recommend for other writers?
Well, I do like conferences because, they're a lot of fun to go to. I learn a lot, and Actually, I think my favorite part of going to conferences is just meeting people and kind of sharing in the writing experience. I definitely recommend them if you have the time and can fit it into your budget. Yes, that was your question, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I guess I was thinking about, you know, we do grow more brain cells over time and the brain isn't fixed, and people say, I can't learn new things, but you can still learn new things until the day you die, can't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I don't know much about specifically how to become a better writer, but learning in general, if you approach things from many different ways, like reading books, going to conferences, practicing different forms, that's how it sets in, and that's how you become a better writer.
Mm. And also as a blogger, again, I wrote another post a while back on consuming and then producing. So what you're doing is you're consuming a lot of information, but then, sorry, I dropped my pen there. But then you're also producing blog posts about it, aren't you? So that's how you almost feed your blog.
And it helps me learn too, to kind of take it in and process it and spit it out in my own words.
Mm. And I'd absolutely recommend that for people, to try and do that with conferences and things. Otherwise, you're totally overwhelmed with information, aren't you?
Right. And then you forget it in a week or so. But if you have it on your blog, it's always there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I really like that. And then you read it a year later and go, I haven't done any of that. Or you read it and you have. So that's good, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, I have a couple of other questions for you that I didn't prep you in advance for, so apologies.
Okay.
So my husband is a scientist. He did biochemistry, so I noticed you did that as well. What I learned from him a lot is about being critical and how science is so critical. And if someone criticizes you in science, that is not a bad thing. That's actually what you look for, isn't it? So how can people learn from that as writers? Because we find criticism terrible.
Right. Yes. I think that's one part of... that's one way being a scientist has really helped me in my writing journey, because I actually wrote a blog post about this also, about how in science, there's like failure is par for the course. You're wrong 90% of the time. And also the way you present your research, you have peer reviewers whose job basically is to go through and find everything that's wrong with your paper. So you can learn very early on to that you have to kind of distance yourself from things and not take it too hard. If something fails, if your experiment fails, or if someone comes and criticizes you, you just kind of, so that's your work. It's not you. And you just kind of carry on and keep trying.
Mm. And the whole point of the criticism is to make things better, isn't it?
Right. I figure, criticism isn't bad criticism is only bad if you don't have a chance to change things after the criticism. Otherwise, it's helpful.
Mm. And I think that's really important for writers. And we often don't get it. We think it's a personal slight. And, I was thinking about this the other day, and I was talking about I'm writing this thriller, and I said, I want to be, popular like, Dan Brown. And everyone was like, oh, I hate Dan Brown. It's awful. And I'm like, well, yeah, okay. So it wasn't the best writing, but his story really engaged people. And I found myself like defending this and sort of not liking the criticism of the genre,
Yeah,
and I was like, I just calm down.
Everybody can have their own taste, and it's very subjective, so. Yeah.
Yes, and that's exactly right. And I think, as writers, we often want everybody just to like our books. Like, everyone will like this book, but they won't.
And I think that might actually be one of the dangers of, I'm saying this as a blogger, as a writing blogger, of things like writing blogs, and which I think are enormously helpful. But at the same time, it's also good to remember that, writing is, in fact, an art and not a science. So it's kind of this balance of useful tips and discussion of technique, but always remembering that there's a lot of room for creativity and being different in the art.
Okay, so I actually wanted to ask you about the whole YA thing because I haven't had a YA author on the show before. So, yeah, I know. And I wanted to ask you about the whole Mockingjay, you know, phenomenon, the Hunger Games.
Yes.
Yeah, so
we should give away the ending here and everybody will hate us.
No, we won't talk about that. But, you know, what do you think is the... what is the key to this crossover success? Because I love the Hunger Games.
I do too. I think Suzanne Collins just does a great job in her pacing, like the way she ends the chapters, so that you have to know what's going on next, and you know, just the intensity of the highs and lows that are in that story. You can't get much more dramatic than, you know, teenagers fighting each other to the death. And I mean, she just does everything so well. The characters in there, that even the minor characters, they just jump off the page. I'm actually, after reading her series, I'm trying to go back to my own characters and trying to liven them up more, so that I can have more of a... So if people were to meet them, they would be able to have a good idea of them.
Mm. And I think that's great because, what you know, again, it's so easy to read books like hers and go, oh my goodness, I could never be that good. But what you've done is you're learning from that, aren't you, and going back and fixing things.
Oh, well, it's definitely really good motivation to go back and revise, because once you're, you know, if you think, you know, you're done revising, you can kind of open up a book that you really like and say, oh, like, am I really at that level yet, or should I go back and try to change things again?
Mm. Actually, I don't know much about her previous writing. Do you know how many other books she's written? Or
I think she's written 5 books before that, at least. She had the Gregor the Overlander series, and I think that was a 5-book series, but I'm not sure.
Mm. Okay, good. So she had some practice. This wasn't like yes. her first
right.
trilogy. that's good. So you say you're writing YA fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So where are you with your book? Is it coming out, or what's going on there?
So I am probably about 2,000 words away from finishing the first draft at the moment. And then I'm revising the first draft as I go along. So there's probably about at least 2 more rounds of revision before it goes out.
Mm. Fantastic. So next year?
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah. No, me too.
So you've been very productive on your thriller. You
can see that. Well, I started in NaNoWriMo last year in November, so it feels like forever, but... But these things take time, don't they?
Yes, they definitely do.
They do. Okay, so that's pretty... Yeah, we're pretty much out of time. So where can people find you and your blog online?
Okay, you can find me at blog.liviablackburn.com. That's Blackburn with an E at the end. Or you can just Google Livia Blackburn and you should be able to find my blog. I'm also on Twitter, and that's LK Blackburn.
Fantastic. And I highly recommend your blog. It's brilliant, not just for people interested in neuroscience. It's got lots about writing as well. So definitely a great blog. So thanks ever so much for your time, Livia. That was great.
Okay.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!